Hello, everybody, and welcome back. This is David Ricklin from the National Career Summit and SelfGrowth.com. The focus of this series is to provide all of you with quality information to help you compete in today's job and career market. We've had some great interviews with useful, practical information. Today, we're fortunate to have a great guest with us speaking about a very important topic, preparing veterans and other people for federal employment. It's a large opportunity. And to help us with this topic, we've invited Nancy Siegel to join us. I want to take a minute and share some of her background with you. Nancy is a federal human resources training and job search expert. Following her own 30-year federal HR career, much of it at the senior level, she founded Solutions for the Workplace LLC in 2003 to provide an HR management perspective to both federal managers and astute applicants to U.S. government positions. Having interviewed and hired more than 1,000 employees, Nancy knows how to get federal job seekers past the gatekeepers by viewing their application through the lens of federal HR and merit hiring principles. She's well-versed in veterans and other hiring practices and eligibilities available to federal applicants. She knows her stuff. Whether you're trying to secure a first government job, reach the next GS level, or transition from the military, Nancy's award-winning federal resume writing and candid practical coaching on the application interview process garners client results, repeat business, success, and a lot of jobs. She's a certified federal resume writer, certified federal job search trainer, certified employment interview consultant, and Myers-Briggs certified. Nancy earned a master's degree in human resources and a second master's in public administration. She was nominated for a Toast of the Resume Industry Award for Best Military Transition Resume, and her resumes have been published in the Book of U.S. Government Jobs, 11th edition, 10 Steps to a Federal Job, and Writing Your High School Resume. She's the co-author of the groundbreaking book, Writing Your NSPS Self-Assessment, and has written multiple articles on federal resume and career-related topics. Nancy, quite a background. Welcome to today's call.
Thanks so much, David, and thank you for that kind introduction and this opportunity.
You're welcome. Clearly, you have a lot of experience in this area, and my job today is to get you to share as much of that as possible with our listeners today. So I want to jump right in. We're talking about preparing veterans and others for federal employment, and I want to focus two things on kind of two broad things. One, the whole issue of federal employment, and then with a specific focus on veterans and preparing veterans for federal employment. And start with a simple question. There's always a lot going on with the government. With everything that's going on in Washington lately, why would someone want to consider a career in the federal government?
Okay, well, that's a great question because things have been in an uproar in Washington. That being said, the federal government is the largest employer in the United States. There are over 2 million federal employees, and that does not count the 700,000 postal workers. At any one time, there are 10,000 job postings, and federal employees do everything from being a doctor or a nurse to repairing trucks to decorating offices to managing programs. So there really is, in the government, something for everyone.
Well, I like that number. So there's literally 10,000 jobs that are posted and available right now for folks. And it also sounds like it's such a wide range of job opportunities that a lot of different people can really find potential jobs for them. And it's a matter of figuring out where they are, how to find them, how to apply to them, and all the pieces of the process.
That's right. That's exactly right, and federal government applications are quite different than the private sector. It's not an intuitive process.
All right. Well, in a little bit, I want to get back to that. I really want to get into that, what the process is, and we'll step back to that in a few minutes. So it's a fairly sizable market in terms of the federal job market. Are there majority of positions in one particular area, or are they all over? It sounds like they're all over the place.
They're all over the country, and in fact, the Partnership for Public Service did a great survey of where the jobs are in the federal government. Obviously, federal government is huge in the Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland area. The third largest employer, largest place where federal employees are is Texas. The fourth is California, and Georgia and Florida come in on the top 10 list as 6 and 7, and the state of Washington is the 10th largest employer of feds. So really all around the country, even though, for example, Illinois is not one of the top 10, it's the largest employer, the federal government is the largest employer in the city of Chicago. So anywhere you look, there are federal employees.
Wait, that's interesting, because the general perception, I know mine was always the majority would be in Washington, D.C., and then Maryland, and I've been in that area enough, Maryland, Virginia. But it sounds like there's quite a few positions outside, and depending on what major city, they probably cover a lot of major cities as well.
That's correct.
So let's take a look. In general, what is the career path, kind of career growth path in federal jobs?
Well, just like everywhere else, there are entry-level positions, mid-level positions, and senior positions. There are also executive positions for the federal government. Those are called senior executive service or SES positions. So depending on your particular career field, you could go start at the beginning and work your way up over the course of a career to be a member of the senior executive service, to be an administrative law judge. It's endless, really.
So there's definitely a lot of growth potential. Do you find most people come in at an entry-level position, or you have significant responsibilities and experience elsewhere you can come in at a higher level?
You can absolutely come in at a higher level, and there are a lot of people who come to the government for a second career, because if you look at the demographics, the ages of federal employees, they actually trend older than in the private sector. So there's a lot of folks who come in after their private sector career or their military career, and who want to give back, and so they look to the federal government for a second opportunity to do that.
Okay, that would make sense. I would imagine, especially a military career, and we'll be delving into that in a little bit, because you put in X numbers of years in the military, you're looking for your kind of second career of what you're going to be doing. So let's take a look. I want to spend some time talking about kind of the application process in terms of federal careers. Is there anything special about the federal application process of applying for jobs?
As I said earlier, getting a federal job, the process is considerably different than in the private sector. The vast majority of federal job openings are posted on a website called usajobs.gov. And 90% of federal positions that are available are on that website. So applicants have to apply through the system. While, you know, you may know people who work for the government, hiring in the government is based on merit principles, which means, in essence, that the best qualified applicant gets the job. To ensure that the best qualified applicant gets the job, all those positions are posted, and all the applications and resumes are reviewed and screened before anyone even gets to a hiring manager. So the who you know is not as helpful in the federal government as it is in the private sector. That's one of the main differences. I'm sorry.
Okay, so can we step through this? So you're saying a large percentage of the jobs are going to be found, and it's usajobs.gov, so I'm here right now. And we'll go through the process of how to search this and what to do a little bit later, but I'd like to step through the application process with you. So I'm at usajobs.com. You search, you find a job you're interested in. What's what's the general process that people need to go to? And if you can step us through the process of the steps that you'll need to go to, and then what happens along each of those steps.
Okay. Well, I would suggest that the very first step before you start searching for jobs is to register on usajobs.gov, because you have to apply through that mechanism for the majority of cases. So you don't want to be signing up for that system, you know, 2 hours before the posting closes. So everybody should really sign up and get a profile ahead of time. Additionally, there are some options within USA Jobs that, rather than looking at 10,000 postings at one time, which no one wants to do, you can actually set up what's called a search agent with certain specified criteria, such as location or occupation or pay, and have job postings automatically sent to you. And the third thing that you can do through USA Jobs before you even get going to look at particular jobs is to set up the system so that USA Jobs will notify you of the status of your application. And you are supposed to, as an applicant, be notified 4 times during the application process through the USA Jobs website. When you apply, whether you're rated qualified or not qualified, whether your application was sent to the hiring manager for consideration, and when the job is filled. So those would be things I would do before I even started to apply.
Okay, so that seems pretty straightforward. I'm there right now, usajobs.gov.
Mm-hmm.
You go top right, you create your account, you set up a profile ahead of time, then you set up the search agent, basically what your search criteria is,
mm-hmm.
and you set up that you're going to get notifications.
Exactly. Now, let's say you find a job that you want to apply for.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things here I would encourage people to look at federal job postings, because I find a lot of folks look at these postings and their eyes start to roll back in their heads. They have a hard time figuring out what they should even be looking at. So I encourage people to look at a number of things. The first thing you should look at is who may apply. And you want to make sure that you're actually eligible to apply for the position. If you are not eligible to apply, don't apply. I mean, it seems rather simple, but a lot of times people skip that step. So that's
so what are some criteria? What would be a sample criteria of who can apply?
Open to all U.S. citizens is the one that most people would want to be looking for. Other things that you may see when you look at the who may apply section would be open to status applicants only. And if you are not currently a federal employee or someone with 3 or more years of active duty military, you're not eligible to apply.
So that's what status applicants mean? So it's someone who's currently in a federal job or has 3 years of military experience?
Mm-hmm. Active duty military. Correct.
Active duty. Okay. So back to, you know, one of the things we're talking about is really preparing veterans. So veterans have, anybody who's had 3 years of active duty, it opens them up to a wider variety of jobs.
That is correct.
And
that being said, they need to make sure that their USA Jobs profile reflects that eligibility. Because if they don't fill out their profile correctly, they won't be given credit for their eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, well, let's go a little bit more into this. So the first step is make sure you're someone who can apply. So you've done some searching. You've found a job. What are the next steps that you need to go through?
I would also encourage people to look at when the job closes, because – when the job is closed, you may not apply anymore. And that's something that is a hard and fast rule for federal postings. A lot of positions are open for 3, 4, or 5 days. And sometimes I get people who ask, does that mean the job is already pre-selected? And I want to say that no, it does not mean that. So if you are eligible and you feel you're qualified, which we'll talk about in a moment, then you should not be deterred by a short open period for application. Okay.
So what's your general sense? Why do they have it so short? To just reduce the number of applicants they get, or they're in a rush to fill it?
There's a couple of reasons. Reason number one is that the average federal job can get upwards of 1,000 applicants. So, yes. And jobs that people think are, you know, exciting, like FBI agent. The last time the FBI agent job was posted, they got over 25,000 applications. So, yes, having a manageable applicant pool is one reason. The second reason that the posting period has gotten shorter is because of an executive order signed by the president several years ago to try and make the application process shorter and more compact, because applicants were complaining that it took too long to hear. So HR offices are under tremendous pressure to shorten everything up and get their jobs filled more quickly.
That makes sense. You don't want to be in that process for a year trying to fill a position.
Exactly.
So I can imagine that makes sense. All right. So let's go through. So what's interesting about that is it tells me that one of the keys is going to be checking this regularly, as well in case you miss. So ideally you'll get your emails with the search agent, and as soon as you get an email saying something's open, you should jump on it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Because if you say, oh, wait a few days, there's a good chance that it'll be closed at that point.
Correct. Okay. In addition, what you want to look at, the next thing you want to look at is qualifications required. And this is an important piece because I find a lot of times applicants say, I know I could do that. That job would be perfect for me. And I would suggest that it's not about knowing you could do a particular job. It's about showing through your resume that you already have.
Right.
So I encourage people to look at the qualifications carefully. And if you don't have the qualifications, you need to move on and pick a different posting.
So I assume if you don't have so these are probably things that are somewhat automated. Some way or somebody's gone through this, they're checking off the qualifications. If you don't have those, you're not being moved to the next level.
That's correct. So you want to look at the qualifications, make sure you have them. Now, most federal job postings have a line in them that say must have 1 year at the next lower grade. If you're coming from the private sector, that's a meaningless statement to you as an applicant. I encourage people who are coming from the private sector to ignore that sentence and look at the next sentence, which says examples of experience include. And that's where you make your determination about whether or not you're qualified.
And I imagine equally important to being qualified is to have your resume demonstrating that you're qualified.
Absolutely, and we'll talk about the resume in just a second. There's a few more things I want to point out about the posting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. In addition to the experience, almost every federal job is accompanied by what's called an occupational questionnaire. And I encourage applicants to review the occupational questionnaire for each posting before they decide to apply. This is typically a multiple choice self-assessment where you determine your additional qualifications for a particular position. In every job posting, there is a link to that occupational questionnaire, and folks need to look at that questionnaire and determine how they would answer the questions before they make the final decision about whether or not they wish to apply. I would suggest that if you cannot give the highest and best answer to each question on the questionnaire, or at least 90% of them, you should probably pick a different job to apply for.
Now, is this a questionnaire that you actually submit, or is it just for your own use?
You will submit it when you apply.
Okay. So it's a good idea that even before you go through the whole process and do all the pieces to it, to go through that yourself to see if you kind of use that as a pre-qualifier for yourself.
You want to use it as a pre-qualifier. The other thing that that questionnaire is quite helpful for is identifying the keywords for that position, and that will help you in crafting your resume if you've identified the keywords.
All right. Can you just, for anybody who's listening that might not know what you mean by keywords, can you just explain exactly what you mean by that?
The keywords of your job posting are words that the HR people will be looking for in your resume to determine whether or not you meet the qualifications. So as an example, I'm looking at a position right now on USA Jobs. This is a position in the Coast Guard, and the position is for shipwright worker. Okay? And one of the things that this looks for is ability to interpret instructions, specifications, and blueprint reading. So things I would have in my resume would be discussions about how I interpret instructions, specifications, and read blueprints. And if you were to look at the questionnaire that accompanies that announcement, you could see other things. For example, which best describes your level of experience with equipment assembly, installation, and repair. And I'll give you some examples. Made independent judgments and plans on the way critical work was executed, which dictated the alignment of ships over blocks, assuring an even distribution of the ship's weight. So if that's not something you've done, then the likelihood of being rated well qualified for that position is not high. Additionally, that tells you that you need to have in your resume demonstration of your ability and experience aligning ships over blocks and assuring an even distribution of ships' weight.
All right. Now,
sorry.
That's interesting. Now, what's interesting, I'm not sure if you have the answer to this. For a lot of these things, is there an automated process? So I'd imagine you're saying some jobs get thousands and thousands of applicants. Is there an automated software program that reviews your answers, reviews your resume application first, and just based on this automated system immediately cuts out a whole bunch of folks, or are these all manually reviewed?
Okay. So these questionnaires, these occupational questionnaires, those are reviewed through software. Okay? And then the people who score the highest on the questionnaire, their resumes are pulled by real people. And then real people actually compare the answers to the questions to applicants' resumes. Because some people go through the questionnaires and say they're an expert on everything.
Sure. Yeah, and then you look at the resume, they didn't do any of the things that they just said they were experts on.
Exactly.
So they don't have any formal experience of it.
So the resumes are reviewed by real people, but the questionnaires are reviewed through an automated system.
And they use the question. It sounds like they use the questionnaires to determine if they're even going to bother looking at your resume.
Bingo. That's exactly right.
So if you're not consistent in terms of what they're really looking for, and you're not providing answers that are consistent with that, no human's ever going to look at your resume.
Most likely not.
Okay.
So I go back to my shipwright worker, and one of the things they wanted is ability to interpret instructions, specifications, and blueprints. Well, there's a lot of people who do that. But if you didn't look at the questionnaire, you may not have understood that the context was really putting ships on blocks and evenly distributing the weight. So you might think you're qualified from the posting, but when you get to the actual questionnaire, perhaps not so much.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right.
Now, what are the other pieces? So you need to go through this questionnaire. You preview it, at least preview. Can you preview all the questions before you answer any of them?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
The link for the questionnaire is in one of two places on your job posting. It's either under how you will be evaluated or the section that's labeled how to apply.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Now, what are the other pieces? So the questionnaire, that's going to be one thing you need to fill out and go through. What are the other pieces of this process that you need to provide?
Okay. One last thing on the posting, and that's how to apply. I encourage everybody to read that because not every agency does it the same way. So some agencies want documents faxed. Some agencies want documents uploaded. And you want to make sure that you have all the requisite documents that accompany your application package before you get started.
Okay. So what would be some examples of things that you need to post or provide? I would assume resume is an obvious one, proof of certain certifications. What are some of the typical things that you're going to need to provide?
Okay, so in some cases, you may need to provide a transcript to demonstrate that you either graduated from school or a particular kind of program or had a certain number of credit hours in a particular field. If you are coming out of the military, you are absolutely going to need to provide your DD-214. And if you're coming out of the military and have what's called a service-connected disability, you will also need to provide what's called your SF-15, your standard form 15, to show that you have a compensable disability. And there are other documents as well that you may need to include with your application package.
All right, so you went through DD-214, and anybody who's had military service is going to know exactly what these are, and they're going to have it. And so you just need to make sure you have copies of it,
legible copies.
Some folks should, what's that?
Legible copies.
Legible copies of it, whether you're going to upload them. So you might need to scan them and upload them, or you might need to fax them somewhere.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or upload some way to upload them or fax them, depending on the position and what you're doing. Now, let's keep going through the process. So each job's going to have a how to apply. So they're not all put your resume in here and go. There's different pieces, and you're going to find out the application process based on the particular job.
Right. And resumes should be uploaded or put into USA Jobs unless the posting specifically says otherwise. I always encourage people to use USA Jobs because that's what your HR people on the other end are expecting. Now, if you have a disability and you cannot use USA Jobs, there is an exception, but try to put your resume into USA Jobs. That is absolutely the preferred approach.
Okay. So if you have a disability that makes it difficult to use, try to have someone else help you or
mm-hmm.
focus on going through there.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. So what other potential things are you going to need? Let me focus on the resume for a little bit. We can spend a few minutes talking about that. Do you have to have one standard resume that you're submitting for all the jobs, or can you modify it and have different? Because in the non-government world, you might be applying for three different jobs and you're tailoring three different resumes. Do you need one consistent one that you're using for USA jobs, or can you have multiple?
I would suggest, just like in the private sector, that people target their resume for the particular position that they are applying for. USA Jobs allows you to have as many as five different resumes in the system. So when you apply, you click on Apply Now on the posting itself. That will take you to USA Jobs, and you actually select the resume you want to use to apply for a particular job.
All right. So the people who are reviewing your application will only see that one resume that you submitted. They won't see the other ones.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's no risk that they're going to say, oh, let me look at this, and they say, oh, this background looks totally different. It's inconsistent.
They can't even get to it.
All right. So let's continue with the process. So you figure out the how to apply, what the steps are. It's going to include a resume, and we'll get back to resumes in a little bit. What are the next steps of the process?
The next steps of the process, once you've decided that you want to apply, is actually pulling your resume together.
Mm-hmm. All right, and we'll get back to the resume because I want to focus on that in a little bit. So you pull the resume together, you upload everything, and what happens next?
Okay. So what happens after the posting closes, and by the way, you don't get extra credit for applying early. Okay. After the posting closes, the system will review all of the occupational questionnaires, and those that score the highest are identified, and HR reviews the resumes. In essence, and this is an oversimplification, applicants are put into different piles. Pile number one is didn't meet qualifications. You're done. If you didn't meet the qualifications, you're not receiving any other consideration. Now, the remaining applicants are put into three piles. For illustration purposes, let's call them gold, silver, and bronze. Everyone in a gold, silver, or bronze pile is qualified, but the gold pile is more qualified than others. It is the gold pile that goes before the hiring manager for potential interviews and selection. So if you are put in the bronze or the silver pile, you're qualified, but the likelihood is you will not get a call for an interview.
All right, so that's your focus. Your focus should clearly be getting in this gold pile.
Correct.
Or the process is kind of moot for you.
There's
no reason to even bother if you don't feel there's a good chance you're going to get into this quote-unquote gold pile at the top pile. It doesn't make sense.
That's right.
Are there anything people should know about that in terms of how they fill out things, or is it based on like overall applicants? So, for example, they might get just a ton of really qualified people, and you know, is there anything people should know about it?
I think it is really important, and this speaks to the resume, and I know you're kind of holding off on that, but the resume is huge in the federal sector, and unlike the private sector where a two-page resume or a one-page resume is considered standard, in the federal sector, a five, six, or seven-page resume is more standard because from an HR standpoint, if it is not on your resume, you did not do it as an applicant. So the reviewers of your resume in the federal process will not make assumptions or draw conclusions. So you have to tell them everything, and you have to tell them everything you did in the context of the job. If it's not related to the job, it's irrelevant.
All right, that's interesting. I have more questions on that, but let's get back to that because I want to focus on the resumes a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go through the next step of the process. So at that point, these gold or top one goes to the hiring managers. Someone contacts you, sets up an appointment with you, a series of interviews, and then eventually a candidate's picked, an offer is made, it's accepted or not accepted. If it's accepted, you come on board, they close the position. If it's not accepted, I assume they go on to the next person. Is that an accurate assessment of kind of the next steps at that point?
That's an accurate assessment with one missing piece, and that is people with military experience have preference in hiring for federal positions. And
all right, so let's talk a little bit more about that because I want to focus on people with military experience. What kind of preference, how can they leverage that in terms of getting a federal job? So let's spend some more time. So you're saying that people with military experience have a preference in this process. So let's step through. Where does that come in initially, and how can you highlight that or really take advantage of that?
Okay. So there are multiple kinds of military preference. There is preference called VEOA, Veterans Employment Opportunity Act, that's a hiring authority. People who have more than 3 years of active duty can apply as under positions that are open to status candidates only. They don't get extra points for that. What they get is the ability to apply.
Right.
In addition, there is 5-point preference and 10-point preference. 5-point preference is for people who served in the military during certain periods. And since the first Gulf War, if you were on active duty more than 180 days, you're eligible for 5 points. And what that does is that it takes you to the top of the category, that gold, silver, bronze category. It puts you to the top of that category.
Even if you didn't, so you need to be in the category to begin with?
Well, if you're qualified, and let's say
so that means any of this, right, okay.
Okay. Now, if you have a service-connected disability of 10% or more, for most positions, you will automatically go to the gold category. There are some exceptions for technical positions. But for most positions, if you have a compensable disability of 10% or more, you're automatically going to go to the gold pile. And what the rule is, and again, this is a simplification, what the rule is that a hiring manager cannot hire a non-vet if there is a vet in that category. So if there is a gold vet, either a 5-point or a 10-point, then that vet must be hired off of that hiring list before any non-vet. Now, a hiring manager may have other lists to choose from, but if the hiring manager is using that particular list, they must hire a vet.
So this is a massive advantage, I would imagine.
Yes.
A really massive benefit. So,
and it
for
doesn't
anybody...
expire.
Excuse me?
It does not expire. So people who earned their preference during Vietnam, as an example, they still have it. It's not just for our most recent war.
So it's almost like anybody who's a vet gets kind of first pass, so or first option to get the position over anybody else, assuming that they make it to that they're qualified. So let me take a look through this. So earlier you talked about kind of these three ways of looking at gold, silver, and bronze. So if someone fits into this, what you're describing, this 10-point profile, 10-point preference, they're automatically put into the gold pile.
Meaning for most positions.
For most positions, unless there's some specific reason that they can't do the position, I would imagine.
Or if, you know, and I don't want to get into the weeds here, but there are certain job categories, typically scientific positions, engineering positions, things like that, where over a certain grade, your people with compensable disabilities do not automatically get to the top pile.
All right. But outside of those, it gives you an opportunity. You're going to be reviewed much sooner. And let's say there's 20 people in this goal pile. Or typically, how many people do they end up for a job? Is there a certain number of candidates that they'll want to review and bring in? Or is
No.
it all over the place?
It's all over the place.
All right. So let's say it's particular. Let's say it's 20. They have 40 people. Let's say they have in their heads they only want to bring in 20. Do they bring in everybody who's in this gold pile?
That is up to the hiring manager. They
might
bring in everyone, you know, that they consider in that gold pile to be gold. Again, illustratively, not literally.
Right.
Or they could interview, bring people in, you know, person to person. They could also interview over the phone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there checks and balances in place, or just the hiring manager knows that if X number of candidates are making the bar in terms of his requirement, his or her requirements, that if one of those is a 10%, has, you know, 10-point preference, that this person needs to get the job offer before anybody else?
Hiring managers know that, and ultimately your selection comes from HR. Hiring managers themselves tell HR who they want to hire, and HR will double check to make sure everything is okay before that offer is made.
All right. So does HR, who goes through the process, reference checks, verifying information on the resume, who does all that part of the process?
The hiring manager will absolutely do reference checks. And sometimes the verification of information on the resume, assuming, let's say, that it wasn't required that you submit your transcript,
right.
Lies on the resume may, in fact, show up during a background check or a security check.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that obviously depends on what type of position and what the clearance is and a wide
exactly.
range of other things that
mm-hmm.
you're looking at. So this is a massive benefit of and a very large advantage, I imagine, for anybody who's a veteran. And kudos to the government for taking care of our veterans. Are there other advantages that veterans have during this application process and hiring process?
Well, veterans' preference is, like you said, absolutely huge, but it does not guarantee that a vet will be selected because there are lots of different kinds of ways that an applicant might apply. For example, let's say I'm already in the government. If
right.
I'm applying as someone who's already in the government, there's no veterans preference on that list. That's an entirely separate list than people coming in from the outside.
Okay, so they get that for outside and they're on an equal playing field with folks who currently have a federal position.
That's right. And let's say I'm coming out of the Peace Corps. That's another eligibility. I would be on a separate list for Peace Corps eligible people. And as a hiring manager, a hiring manager could use the Peace Corps list, they could use the list of people who are already in the government, or they could use the list of people coming in from the outside. So there's lots of different ways. I mean, federal hiring is quite complex. We've barely scratched the surface. So it doesn't guarantee a vet a job. What it does is guarantee first consideration.
All right. Now, Are these other folks, let's say you already have a federal position or you're coming from the Peace Corps, do you also apply to those people also apply through usajobs.gov?
Absolutely.
Okay, so everybody's still going to be going, but based on the information that they're sharing, they'll also be indicating that they already have a federal position or they're coming from the Peace Corps, whatever other particular bucket they're coming from, and that might have an impact.
And their profile, their USA Jobs profile, has to reflect the right information.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Let's keep going. I know we've been talking for a while. There's a bunch of other things I want to cover, so we're going to keep moving on. Any other final words? So this relative to veterans, because I want to continue through the overall process. Any other final benefits or final advantages or things that veterans can do to give them kind of a leg up in terms of finding positions?
Briefly, two other things I want to mention. There's two other kinds of veterans eligibility which might be helpful. One is for people who have a 30% or more compensable disability, and the other is called VRA, Veterans Reemployment Act. These are non-competitive eligibilities, which means, in essence, that federal agencies can hire those people without going through USA Jobs. So for veterans, they should attend veterans career fairs. They should be networking with federal agencies and make sure that they understand their hiring eligibilities and come prepared to help hiring managers, because sometimes hiring managers don't understand all of the nuances.
Okay.
And the final piece, and I'll let you move on because I know we're running out of time, and that is if you are a vet, you need to apply for positions as many ways as you are eligible. As a vet, you could apply for the same position as many as four different ways, which might mean that you would show up on as many as four different hiring lists. And, of course, the more lists you're on, the better your chances.
Well, you say four different ways. One of the ways USA Jobs? Would that be considered one?
So one of the ways might be if you are, let's say, VEOA eligible, have more than 3 years of active duty, you would apply through USA Jobs as a status applicant.
Right.
You might also apply, depending on your particular situation, as a VRA, Veterans Reemployment Act eligible applicant. You could also apply for that job using your 10 points for an all-citizen announcement, and you could also apply as a 30% or more compensable disabled, if that was your situation. You could apply for all of those through USA Jobs. You could also apply for some of those eligibilities directly to the agency.
Okay. All right, sounds good. So I'm going to plow through a bunch of other areas for us in the few minutes that we have here. We covered quite a few things already. Job salaries and grade levels, are those published anywhere?
Yes. They will actually be on the job announcement itself. And a lot of people get excited when they see the high end of the range, but just recognize that it's HR's job to try and get applicants as cheaply as possible.
Sure.
So you may not get the high end of the range.
Right. No, that makes sense. All right. Now, do other agencies have their own job boards? So outside of USA Jobs.
Mm-hmm. So there's a certain percentage of jobs which are not regular government, not in what's called the competitive service. Instead, these are positions that are in the accepted service, and that's EX. Things like FBI agent, CIA, some of the financial regulatory agencies. So by regulation, they are not required to post on USA Jobs, But many of those agencies, in fact, do, because USA Jobs has become one-stop shopping. Nonetheless, if there is an agency you're interested in, generally the intelligence agencies, you should look at their particular agency website to see if there are jobs there that are specifically posted outside of USA Jobs, and go for those as well.
All right. Is there any place to find like a full listing of all agencies?
There are several hundred agencies, and I would encourage applicants to look beyond the big ones, you know, which are typically the Department of Defense, the VA, the Department of Homeland Security, and look at the smaller agencies as well. There are agencies that have less than 1,000 people, and those are all, the competition for many of those agencies is often less, and they go begging for applicants. There are several books out there that list, you know, all the federal agencies. I cannot personally think of a website off the top of my head that's got a full list of all of them. I'm sorry.
Okay. No worries. I'm sure people can Google it and they have a sense of the different agencies. So let's spend some time. What I'd like to do in the few minutes that we have left is just a couple of real quick questions and then focus a little bit on the resumes. So people hear about GS schedules, general schedule. What exactly is that?
That is the basic pay scale in the federal government, and it is geographically based. The pay scale is different in Washington, D.C. than it is in Atlanta, than it is in Montana. If people want to see the pay scales in different locations, they can go to opm.gov. That stands for the Office of Personnel Management.gov. That's the federal agency's main personnel office, and they publish the pay scales for every geographic location.
All right. Are there tests that are required to take for certain positions?
For a few positions, there are tests, but what used to be known as the civil service exam is gone, and it's been gone for years.
Okay. KSA, what are KSAs and how do they work?
KSAs are knowledge, skills, and abilities. I think in the private sector we talk about them as competencies.
Yep.
In the old days, applicants used to have to write essays, known as KSA statements, when they applied for federal jobs. Under hiring reform, which was an executive order signed by the president that went into effect in 2009, KSAs were abolished as an initial part of the application process. What agencies are using now are those occupational questionnaires we discussed.
Okay, sounds good. Now what I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes more talking about the resumes. One of the things you mentioned earlier on is the concept that in traditional non-government is, you know, this one- or two-page resume. You put all, you know, the highlights, most important things. Government's common to have 5, 6, or 7-page resumes. Can you give additional insights as people are getting their resumes together? What type of things to be putting in? I assume the obvious, you want to go through all the requirements and you want to make sure all the requirements are covered in your resume.
Absolutely.
And the keywords, you mentioned the keywords as well.
Mm-hmm.
From the questionnaire that you're going to be filling out. So those are two no-brainers to make sure they match. What are some other things to take into account or focus on relative to your resume?
Well, just like in the private sector, when you have metrics and achievements in your resume, you want to have those in your federal resume as well, because without achievements, it's like saying, I did this, I did that, I did the other thing. Trust me, I did it well. Metrics, of course, give your work context. So that's very analogous to the private sector. What is not so analogous is the level of detail. you can't just say in your resume, worked with senior executives. Instead, you've got to detail how you worked with senior executives, for what purpose, in what context. You know, did you just sit at a meeting with your mouth shut, or did you advocate for your recommendations and have to speak extemporaneously? Those kinds of things, a level of detail about everything that you did. Because as I mentioned earlier, if it's not in your federal resume, the HR people will not assume that you did it. Interpreted regulations. What regulations? List them. Not only should you list those regulations, what did you do with them? Did you track them to see if there were legislative changes? Did you prepare summaries of those legislation, those pending changes, and consider the impact that might have on your operations? Were you the go-to person and the expert on those regulations? Each of those kinds of things, you need a lot of detail. Other things that you would never put on your private sector resume are things like the number of hours of a week you worked. Why is that important? If you recall, earlier I spoke about how you have to have 1 year of specialized experience.
Yes.
Well, if you don't put on your resume that you worked 40 hours a week, the HR person doesn't know whether you worked 40 hours a week or 20 hours a week. And if you did something for 20 hours a week, unless you have 2 years, it doesn't count as one
right.
year of experience. So there, if you go to OPM's website, you can see model resumes. There are also several federal resume writing books available in, you know, Barnes & Noble, and you can get them online and off Amazon. And I would suggest that people who are serious about this really take the time to do this. Because this is a process. Applying for a federal job is totally doable, but it takes three things, in my view. Applying for jobs for which you're truly qualified, and by that I mean you already have the experience that they're looking for and can give the highest and best answers to each question on the questionnaire. The second thing it takes is using a targeted federal-style resume, which, as we've spoken briefly, is quite different and much
right.
more detailed. And
mm-hmm.
the third thing it takes is patience, because the government doesn't move fast. And I tell people it can take, which is not what people want to hear, but it can take 6 to 12 months to get a federal job.
Right, but there's huge benefits once you get it.
Huge benefits.
And opportunities, yep. All right, we're just about at the top of the hour, Nancy. First, I want to thank you. This tremendous amount of very specific information that you shared that is extremely helpful. Just two quick things before we wrap up. Any final thoughts you want to leave for anybody? And then how could people find out more about you and what you're doing?
Well, like I said, this is doable, but it is a process, and it works best if you follow the rules and
right.
follow the process. So if people are interested in finding out more about me or how I might help them navigate the process, they can find me at www.solutionsfortheworkplace.com. That's www.solutionsfortheworkplace.com, or email me directly at nancy@solutions-workplace.com.
All right. Sounds good. This has really been very helpful, very useful. Thanks again for a great interview. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We have more great interviews coming up. I want to let everybody know, keep your eyes open for updated information. And thank you again, Nancy, and thank everybody. I want to thank everybody for being part of the National Career Summit. We'll talk
to
everybody
soon.
You're welcome. Talk to everybody soon.